Bearded. Biomed.
Welcome back, everybody. I am your host, Bearded Biomed, and today I actually have a guest for 2023. I am joined by Tony Danko from Capital I, and we are just going to get into a little bit about who they are, what they represent, what they can bring you, and just kind of, as well as myself, sit back and learn about what they have to offer. So, Tony, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chase. I appreciate you having me on.
It's been an endeavor, long time coming, and I'm glad to have you on. I'm interested to learn kind of all the different facets and cogs that are involved with the company. First off, before we just get into any of that, I would love to just hear a little bit about your background, you know, what brought you here to today.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, my biomed background actually starts at the same place where yours started. Army, went to the DoD BMET school. I went up to Shepherd Air Force Base, so I wasn't old enough to go to
Fitzsimmons. Yeah, I went to Shepherd too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so we both went to Shepherd, and then throughout my career, I transitioned as an NCO and a warrant officer, and then retired as a CW4. So I had various management responsibilities within the Army, and just, you know, started off with the biomed piece, and really took to it and enjoyed it, and now doing it on the as a retiree on the commercial side and civilian side, you know, working through the field and seeing people and opportunities like you have, and putting some information out there. Definitely wanted to add to the content, expose folks to our company and what we do, and look for people that are looking for work in this field, and folks that might need some assistance with our services.
I appreciate the Army background. You know, I would hope everybody knows by now that the bread and butter of where the biomed comes from is from the military schoolhouse. I think roughly 60-70% of our field is contributed through, you know, the 68 Alpha, at least through the Army program, and then, you know, all the other tri-services that's now down at San Antonio, which, you know, as critical as, you know, that feeding source of new biomeds comes through that array, even, you know, I think the last time I spoke to somebody that oversees that program, you know, even the Army, at least from their standpoint, is seeing a drop and decline and, you know, getting biomeds in, which, you know, trickles down obviously to the civilian front. And that's where, you know, companies like yourself come in to, you know, give veterans obviously a leg up, and other people that are interested in finding opportunities within our field. Cause there's always an opportunity somewhere. One of my chiefs back in the day told me that, you know, you can find success anywhere in the biomed field as long as you're willing to travel. So I was not, so my options were limited. But I would love to hear, just give us a little bit of insight about what Capital I is today.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we do is we kind of started off looking at the government contracting, mainly augmented staff, some consulting services. So the company started with basically just me as a billable employee doing consulting work. And then as we grew, we start to win some contracts, we support the depots at USAMA. So we're a subcontractor for Gold Belt Frontier. So we have about 20 biomeds in those four depots across the U.S. So we got Toby Hanna, Hill Air Force Base, Sierra, which is near Reno, Nevada, and then Stockton, so Tracy, California.
Right.
And then we also kind of grew from there and got on another contract with the VA. So we support the different VA medical centers, mainly doing medical device integration. So having those devices start to talk to the EHR as they're rolling out Cerner. And again, those positions are across the U.S. So we have about 30 to 40 biomeds supporting the VA, and many of them doing the information systems side.
So since you are so integrated into that whole infrastructure of supplying, you know, the VA, the depots, you know, because that's kind of like its own ecosystem almost, you know, outside of the civilian sector. But obviously it's contracted work and you can have people put in there in long-term positions too. But I think let's take it from a perspective of somebody is about to exit the military as they want to get into position. And as it was explained to me back in the day, there's a slew of different prerequisites and things you got to do to get into that GS system, start working your way. I was wondering if you could just give like maybe a kindergarten version, a broken down version of how that all works.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and the interesting thing too, on the civilian market, biomeds can be former furniture installers. And then they're within an organization for long enough, they get exposed, they start touching equipment, and then they can be a biomed. Now, when you start looking at the federal sector and the DOD and the VA, there are pretty much just three ways to be a biomed. Number one is the DOD BMET school. That's a prerequisite. If you hit that, you're in. The other one would be an associate's degree in electrical engineering with a biomedical concentration. And then the third way is if you have experience, you're not formally trained, but you have the AAMI credential, whether it be a CBET or CRES or things like that, that's pretty much the gatekeeper to get you into federal service as either a contractor supporting the federal government or a federal employee, a GS employee. So our bar for hiring and our target for recruiting are folks with one of those three credentials,
right,
or education pieces.
And I think when I was initially looking, you know, obviously I think veterans will get a little bit more of an opportunity through the system when they're, you know, applying to such different positions. If you wouldn't mind breaking down a little bit of the GS side of it, like maybe some of the things that somebody looking to get into that position needs to look out for, what they need to do to set themselves apart, you know, go through the process kind of deal.
Yeah. So one of the big things is I'd say probably about 30% of our employees have been hired or you know, poached by the GS system from the government. So it's, they use our technicians and our personnel system to do a test drive. So if you really want to get into the GS system and start to work for the federal government, if you find a contractor that's supporting, that's a huge pool for those hiring managers on the government side to pull from a lot of those contractors. Now, the other piece too is just to make it known that you want to go after one of those positions. And it's just really being a general biomed that's well-rounded in a lot of general biomed devices. And then to be able to take a look and go in at the ground level. You know, not everybody's going to be a CT tech or, you know, fix an MRI. But if you're a general biomed and you can demonstrate that you can repair all kinds of equipment and that you're a problem solver, then you can definitely have a leg up. So, of course, there's some formal things you need to do. So if you go to USA Jobs, you build out your profile to apply for the different positions that are posted, and then you work through that way. I believe on one of your podcasts or a couple episodes ago, you talked about some resumes. You know, that 10-page resume, that's just going to get lost in the sauce. I mean,
it's obsolete nowadays.
Yeah, you don't want to read that. Don't provide a 30-page list of all of the pieces of equipment that you've ever PM'd in your life. You know,
but see, I still talk to some managers just across the field, and some people still like to see that, the list of every device that you know. And like, I've seen that coming out of some of the people being taught that to put on their resumes coming out of some of these programs. And it's good that, you know, you can list generally, like, especially, I usually say specialty. Absolutely. Put that on there. But I don't need to know that you know how to work on these 10 different type of patient monitors. It's the same type of theory. And I feel like it's, I think we need to get away from that to where people are telling new recruits, new people getting into the field, trying to get positions to list off every single thing they work on. And I still see that.
Yeah. And I think a good rule of thumb is if it's something that you can learn just in your biomed general training, leave that off.
But if it's anything that's left seat, right seat kind of deal.
And if it's specialized or you went to manufacturer training, absolutely include that. Because that could be, you know, a cost driver. You can, you know, a prospective employer could see, hire this person, they're going to eliminate contracts.
That's the perfect way to define it. If you got a certificate, if you're going to OEM training, you're going to get a certificate.
Absolutely.
Somebody paid for you to go. So obviously we know that a lot of these depot level positions and, you know, the whole GSVA infrastructure, there's always a need for people to get into that system. Now, I would assume that you guys also, you know, get people into regular civilian positions as well, too. Or is it just specifically federal?
Yep. No, we're going on the civilian side. So we do operate as an independent service organization. So we support health systems, and then the range really that we support health systems are from that general biomed, that staff augmentation, and then all the way up to that management and that leadership. You know, I was talking to Deanna Hughes, who's the CW5 Army Command Chief Warrant Officer right now. She's a senior 670 Alpha, and I hire all of her retiring CDB4s and CDB3s. So I was joking with her last year that I had more CDB4s on my team than she has on hers. Because we're a great springboard from active duty to the civilian side. And so what we do is we have some management consulting. So within the at USAMA as well, we have some of these retired warrant officers that provide that management consulting, policy oversight, strategy, and then we're providing that same talent to the private sector, you know, kind of those private hospitals and health systems, either to look at their data, look at the policies and procedures, SOPs. So we have these seasoned retired warrant officers that can look at these programs and provide some leadership, mentorship, and oversight of those different programs. So and everything that falls within that range, we also provide. We have some good data analytics teams. We can do CMMS integration. We have some partners that we work with where inventories. So all those things to do the healthcare technology management, the medical device lifecycle management, we provide that support.
I like that because you guys are actively putting them in a place for success. One of the things, at least when I was getting out, that was so frustrating to me is that it felt like there wasn't as much support, I guess. Like, I know they've changed some things overall when it came to like preparing you to go out into the civilian sector and, you know, find success, which again, like I've been told that the whole walk out of the military kind of deal, like prepping you for the whole thing has changed several times. But, you know, even then, like I was running a biomed shop. I had technicians under me. I was NCO. I was, you know, all that stuff. I had experience in multitudes of things, but you know, I applied to like 20, 30 jobs, and most people don't realize just what a military trained biomed brings to the table, much less somebody in a leadership position that lives, breathes, like you said, writing policies and procedures, the active management, system analytics, all that stuff. It's good that companies out there like yourselves are giving veterans a leg up, because I still to this day will argue that veterans still struggle finding positions. From your, you know, your aspect, obviously you have the data and you can see where you're fielding people and such. Do you see that on your side, or am I just kind of?
Yeah, no, I see, you're absolutely spot on, 'cause, and it's really about the veteran and understanding their value, and then how to describe that value that somebody outside of the military can understand. So for example, when I got out, I went to work for Kaiser Permanente, and when I was interviewing, everything was an acronym or an initialism, and I was able to just spit it all out for military jargon. But then to go back and kind of soften some of that and translate that to what those civilian agencies or civilian companies are used to saying. You start talking about cost savings, looking for optimization. And then there's a lot of time too that you have to talk to either an IT professional that's going to run the HTM program, a supply chain professional that's going to run the HTM program, or in my case, when I went to Kaiser Permanente, it was a facilities ran the clinical technology program. So to really kind of have that tint of facilities and how biomed works with facilities. And my experience and how that would all translate. So it's really is figuring out who is in charge of that organization, who's going to run it, and then what are those major touch points or kind of buzzwords that will resonate with them from your experience.
That's the key, right? Because every facility is gonna, work and have different responsibilities and expectations of the biomeds. I've came across, because we're ISO 2, the company I work with, and you'll go into a facility and biomed is at the same level as, all the other departments. Their voice is heard, they have clear expectations, guidelines, and they work in tandem with everybody else. Then you go to another facility and they're like three tiers below, or what facilities IT's over them. You have multiple people that they have to report to. So it's a constant struggle in our field is trying to navigate where you fit into that ecosystem, because everybody has a different culture and expectation for us.
Yeah, no, and that's the other piece too, is then to go into that with some confidence, because there are a lot of folks that are nervous. They've done this in the army for whether it be 6 years or 20 or 30 years. It's what they know, and then there's this fear or this idea when you're in the military that we always talk about. Well, on the civilian side, they don't do it this way because it's for profit. But the dirty little secret is they're just as confused or figuring it out as we are in the military. And there are a lot of things that from the military we can bring to those civilian organizations to help out. So
Absolutely.
they don't run things perfectly, like we think, or we think they do,
Oh,
because you
they do
probably saw
not.
that.
Anybody watching or listening, you'd be surprised at just how unorganized some hospital systems can be. That raises a good point too. You have individuals with decades of experience leading teams, leading, the whole dynamic, like you said, the CW4, CW5s that are just a cut. I mean, you don't just get to that position just being run of the mill. The warrant officers within our field are like top tier. They've done some things that obviously lended them to that position, and rightly so. They should get the same opportunities to put them as close to that level, if not, around that. I know when I got out, I actually had to kind of start over almost. I was in a leadership position, and then I had to humble myself real quickly and realize that, hey, I don't know that much. A lot of the equipment, for instance, that the military utilizes, none of that stuff's getting used out here in the civilian sector. A lot of the processes and how things are ran are different. People's mentalities are different. So, I had to lower myself and, start, but I'm back up to where I was at before. And, I don't know if that's difficult for people that was possibly in the position that you and several others were, like having to just take like a regular technician job as opposed to acclimating and moving into something more fitting their expertise.
Yeah, and it's expertise, and then kind of positions of authority or responsibility. So I would say when you're in the military, it's almost like a 100% or even a 10x responsibility marker, whether it be the amount of equipment or the dollar amount of budget that you're
Oh, we
responsible
love our
for.
dollar amounts in the military.
Yeah,
Was responsible for this much of equipment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So when you step out, you're not going to be in a position where you're responsible for that much, or you're not going to have the authority, the same authority that you had when you were in. And then that is very humbling, you know. So when I transitioned out, I was working for the Office of the Army Surgeon General. So at a very high level, so we had these huge budgets. And then I went to, you know, a regional, health system at Kaiser Permanente in the mid-Atlantic states. And my scope and my responsibility was much smaller. So yeah, you're definitely right. You got to humble yourself, but then you can demonstrate to your leaders that you can take on more. But don't jump in right away just trying to take everything over. Just show that you're competent. Go through and learn what's happening within that organization. Learn any new devices if you're working on devices, or if you're in a management position. I would say the biggest thing that you're going to want to learn would be the financial side. You know, budgeting, managing the finances,
All dealing
and then
with
working through that piece.
accreditation.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the thing that was different for me. You know what? That's why I also went and got the CHTM, because you know that's something that lets me stack myself a little bit higher when it comes to management. And I had to really sit back, and I really leaned on my manager a lot to teach me the ins and outs of, you know, what's dealing with Joint Commission like, what's dealing with DMV like, you like, what are some of the questions they're going to ask? Expectations, you know, it's like I love how you broke it down though. It's not so much as, you know, we're not incapable of doing it, but take some time to acclimate into your new situation, become proficient at that, and then take on more. And then really get to know. This wasn't obviously a warrant level site, but I had a technician reach out to me that's about to transition out. They're like, "Hey, what would you recommend? I'm going into a hospital system soon." I'm like, first thing you got to do is just be ready to learn. You know, lean on the technicians that are already there, because they already know the system. They know the ins and outs, the expectations. They have the knowledge. And then go around and meet all the staff in each department, because those are the people you got to work for. And by those couple of things, you're going to be successful in pretty much any environment as long as you go into it like that.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And if you're going to be responsible for sections, I think definitely look at that administrative staff that's taking care of that department or section, and then the clinical end users, and talk to them, because you're going to get some insights from them. And if they trust that you're their biomed, like that's a huge compliment. If a clinician says he's my BMed or she's my BMed, you know, let them kind of take ownership
Right.
of what you provide to them, right? And then you're going to have an advocate. And then if you build that relationship, and sometimes parts may take a long time to come in, or equipment starting to back up, you're going to get a little bit more leeway. You're going to get some benefit of the doubt from folks that you have a good relationship with. So I think that's a huge piece, where if you're confrontational, emails start flying quickly in the commercial side, and it'll go all the way up to the chief operating officer or president of a system that biomed is terrible. But if you just have a good
Yeah.
conversation and good rapport with folks,
Hey, that is
you
one
get some
thing that
leeway.
transferred over from the military though, is emails are everything. They saved your butt in the military and they save your butt in the civilian sector. You
Yep.
can't argue an email.
That's right.
So, let's pivot here a little bit. So capital I, obviously, like you said, you help place people in the right position, but I guess what else do you guys do? Like, is there more of what you know, other people could seek you out for other reasons.
Yeah, so obviously the talent management or talent acquisition, that's what we want to focus on and get some good employees. But you're right. So we do provide services, and these services are a range of things that happen within the life cycle. So one of the things that we like to start with is your inventory and the data for your inventory. So everybody wants to have a world class and most optimal HTM program that runs a huge AEM program and all these other gee whiz things. But you can't get to that level of optimization until you have a really firm understanding of what your inventory looks like, and then that your data within your inventory is normalized so you can run data analytics against what you're doing. So that's one of the big offerings that we do. We can come in and we align your asset inventory to an ECRI standard. Because we all know as people bring on equipment within a hospital or even on an ISO, there's two or three or four different people that are plugging this stuff into the CMMS, yep. And it's not always going to be the same.
Standardization.
Yeah. So standardizations for data entry, and then normalization for what you're calling everything.
Right.
So that's a big piece. So once that is all standardized or normalized, then you can really make the data work for you, because then instead of, you know, you have these ultrasounds that you have the same make model, but you haven't entered 10 different ways for your 10 different image. You're not going to be able to tell that right data story to then be able to do different data analytics or run reports to show how that stuff's performing in a maintenance environment.
I had an accreditor say one time when they were this, you know, it was a random hospital. I can't remember which one it was, but they said the best thing you can do that's going to always make me happy with you is when it comes to your process and how you do everything is clearly define what you do and then do what you say you're doing. If you can do those two things, you're more than likely going to be on my good side as opposed to me tracking you down for something. And that goes in tandem with what you were talking about is, you know, there has to be standardization in our processes, how we word things, how we do things. There shouldn't be any deviation from the expectations for each technician. Everybody should be doing the same thing. And that also gives our field as a whole credibility, showcasing that we are competent, that we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, that, you know, that goes into the right to repair thing with OEMs. If we're on the money when it comes to that stuff, it's going to be lights out. There's no argument in that we are doing what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And then the other thing too, that when the pandemic hit, data was king. I mean, how many people were asking for? How many ventilators do we have? How many BiPAPs do we have? What's the status? Where is it? And that was life and death stuff. You know, life and death data analytics that we were trying to dig through, and how many man hours we had to waste to just scour the facilities and try to clean up our databases. Looking for those types of items that were needed and needed to be spread out and put into the right areas to support patient care.
So obviously we covered a lot today, and this is not going to be the last time you're on here, because you are a well of information and resources for the field that I can't just limit it to this one time. So for anybody listening and watching, Tony is going to be back on here, because Capital I has a lot more to offer and just educating, providing opportunities. I want to really, I'm all about supporting our veterans and giving everybody a leg up and the best chance to succeed. So Tony, I really appreciate you being on today. It's been a pleasure, sir. I know this has been a long time coming, and I'm glad we finally got to link up our schedules to get this moving.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate it. And I appreciate everything you're doing too, pushing the field forward. I mean, it's places and things and like what you do and what the other folks do to get the social media out there. One is to educate the people in our field, but then to educate folks to come to the field. And that's really what we need to focus on. So I appreciate everything you're doing. So thank you for having me on.
I appreciate that. That's the biggest struggle, and it's not going to get solved overnight, but if we're consistent at it and really dedicated to fixing the issue, it will happen.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right, sir. Until next time, I appreciate you being on, and may the beard be with you.